So there you go. Yesterday, just to show you that there is fairness in the world, I'm stopped at the I'm southbound on Texas Avenue, right there as you would turn left to go into Barnes & Noble. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I've got a red light. People who are northbound have a red light. And a white coupe goes through, I believe it's a Lexus, goes roaring through there at about 55. I mean, it's a red light than Dallas.
Were they southbound or northbound?
They were northbound.
Uh-huh. And you were trying to turn left?
No, I was just stopped.
I was just pointed.
We were all just watching that happen, and that's when the motorcycle policeman pulls out of the parking lot.
Yes.
Yeah, so every once in a while.
Every once in a while. I think it should be perfectly acceptable right then that the light should turn a special color. We could, you know, we could make it blue or something like that.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And that means everyone get out of your vehicle and applaud.
Or start honking your horns or something, you know, yeah.
And I just
little demonstration.
And I don't know, I'm telling you, this car was going so fast.
So they got it for speeding and running red light.
Probably. I mean, I can't tell you what the officer wrote him up for, but don't know if that person was talking on the phone, otherwise distracted, or just felt like they were important enough that the red light didn't mean them. But for whatever reason, that would be one that would be interesting to be able to record.
Was the police officer, was he there in the median?
No, he actually was in line to turn north.
Oh, I see.
Pulled out from behind a car.
Oh, got me a good one.
And again, wouldn't you love to be a mind reader of the person driving that car? Yeah! I've never done this before, but the first time I do. Yeah, man, right.
Sure. Either that or, what did I do?
Yeah, I did.
It's probably just as likely.
Yeah. This dadgum speedometer, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. And that was a red light, huh? I didn't see it. Anyway.
When did they put that light there?
Yeah, really. So, David Dewhurst.
Is worth $11 billion.
And that's part of the point. As Chase tongue-in-cheek almost goes, there's a range, and so it's hard to know exactly what they're worth. And that's true. Now, and what they say is, like, you have stocks that are worth anywhere between $640 and $9 million. Oh, yeah, okay, I fall in there. That's a little bit much, but it's between, like, $25,000 and $350,000. So there's a range there. Well, wouldn't it be nice if we could go ahead and kind of file our taxes that way? Now, what was your income last year?
It was somewhere between 19 and 600,000.
Yeah, that's something. But that would mean that we would think that members of Congress played by different rules. They don't. They're just like us, aren't they? Yeah.
Busy. I would figure more concerning for Texas voters would be not what his net worth is, but the fact that David Dewhurst has not publicly participated in any forums.
You know, he hasn't, as a matter of fact. And as I was talking to an observer of this situation the other day, because there are people who are seeking the Republican nomination for United States Senate that the lieutenant governor is also looking for. And they said, you know, he's really just going to use flyover money. That was their phrase, flyover money. He's just going to fly over the state and sprinkle money. And he'll buy it up in the markets. I mean, he'll probably buy advertising on this station unless he's listening right now. And as a result, that's what we'll hear. Everybody else is going to have to fight with a short stick.
And the sad part is, you know, as much as is possible this day and time, take politics out of the equation. I realize that's what we are talking about, but take politics out of the equation. And agree or disagree with his policies, this is exactly the opposite of what a guy like LBJ did, who made sure that he shook every hand that he came into contact with.
He was a retail politician.
I mean, he got in front of crowds big and small to jazz everybody up. Granted, it was a different time. That's what you had to do. But how sad is it that I mean, what's not being said, but what is being said is, I want to go to the Senate. It's not about representing you. I want to go to the Senate, and I will buy you off in the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm the choice because I've got a lot of money.
So I hope you're happy with knowing that frankly, right now, if you vote for David Dewhurst, since we have no clue what the man actually stands for from a senatorial standpoint, I hope you know that you're being bought. So I hope you know that whatever you're being bought for, that's your price. That's the price of your vote.
And just kind of as an aside, that's probably not even the office that he wants.
Yeah.
He was wishing that a guy from out in West Texas had done a little bit better in a campaign for another office. Because he didn't want to leave Austin. That's not the gig he wants in D.C. So you might elect him to a job that's really his second choice. So there. And just while we're throwing it around, you know, that's why we're here, to make sure that they have a regular paycheck. President was busy yesterday. He was in Scranton.
He was. I saw that big old plane take off from the Scranton airport.
Did, really?
Yeah.
Were the guys from the office waving?
Yeah. Yeah. Kevin was out there. Yeah. Laying on the runway.
Exactly.
Right.
So now he did that.
Uh-huh.
He said, while there, if Congress doesn't act to extend this tax cut, then most of you, the typical middle class family, is going to see your taxes go up by $1,000 at the worst possible time.
Mm-hmm.
A young lady said that she just can't afford that, and it would be tough on you. Oh, by the way, then he left there and went to New York for three different fundraisers.
Wonder what the average cost was.
I'm going to tell you.
Oh, good.
The American Jewish Congress, that was the first gig. That was $10,000 a plate.
And did you get food, or did you just get a plate?
Probably just a plate. He said there, this administration has done more in terms of the security of the state of Israel than any previous administration. That's what he said. Two more fundraisers finished off the night.
Prime Minister of Israel might have some points of disagreement with them.
Yep, that's true. Second stop, that was the swanky one.
Yeah, New York.
Yeah, $35,000 a head for that one.
Yeah, there were like three of them, weren't there?
Yeah, and then the third one is $1,000 a ticket to Shindig at the New York Sheraton. So that's $46,000 for those three. So your average there would be about $18,000 per gig.
And that goes down considerably because you had one that was $1,000.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And last night, Anderson Cooper. He was talking about this and how they determine what trips are official business and what trips are campaigns and how each one is paid for. He did a little story on this. And come to find out that if the White House determines that a trip is campaigning, they reimburse the government, they reimburse us the cost of a first-class commercial airline ticket.
That covers it.
Yeah.
Right? That covers it all.
Yeah, it's something like, 1% of the actual cost or something like that we, the taxpayer, get reimbursed for that.
Everybody does it. It's just he's done it more than a lot of people.
Right. We still pay for his staff and his Secret Service and all of that. We don't go even on the campaign stops.
But, if Ron Paul gets elected president, we'll do the same thing for him. So, I'm glad that he told us that that's the case.
Yeah.
Now, Nudie Poo was on with Baby Jesus last night.
Really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, again, he's a student of history, and so it's fun to hear him talk. And he said, he wanted to be the nominee and debate Barack Obama the same way as the Lincoln-Douglas debates. And he said, here's what happened. He said, Lincoln went to Douglas and said, I want to debate you, and Douglas wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so what he would do is he would follow Douglas. Douglas would speak in a town one day, and Lincoln would come in and rebut what he said the next day.
Right.
And after he did that for a while, Douglas said, I guess we're going to have to do this. Yeah. Thus the Lincoln-Douglas debates. He said, if I am the nominee, this is what I will do. He said, my agenda will be made by the White House. Wherever the president speaks, I'll speak there 4 hours later.
Really? Unless he speaks in the East Room, then
that might be a little difficult. Yeah. Yeah, there could be some places where he won't be able to get in.
Hello, let me in, please.
But if he's out there campaigning, and I thought that was pretty interesting. That was pretty interesting. And finally today, a letter from a guy, we don't know who he is, but he worked for Goldman Sachs for a long time. His name is Leon Cooperman, and he basically calls the president out. And I don't like to read long things to you, and this is a little bit lengthy, but the idea is that it's time for the president to tone down his rhetoric. He said, as president first and foremost and leader of your party second, you should endeavor to rise above this partisan fray and raise the level of discourse to one that is both civil and more conciliatory, that seeks collaboration over confrontation, that is what leading by example means to most people, to frame the debate as one of rich and entitled versus poor and disposed. or excuse me, dispossessed, is to both missing the point and also inflaming an already incendiary environment. It is also a naked political pander to some of the basest human emotions, a strategy, as history teaches, that never ends well for anyone but totalitarians and anarchists. I kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, be a leader. And the problem is, this guy has grown up as being a community organizer. He's done guerrilla warfare against the greater state, and now he actually leads the greater state. And so it really has. It has now gotten to the point where all we're talking about is class warfare, and that's not good for the country. And then finally, just real quick, apparently Bret Baier was on Bill O'Reilly last night. You know, he had this interview with Mitt Romney earlier this week, and Bret Baier told the story that after they had finished the interview, Romney went into his holding room and then came back out and told him he thought that some of his questions were, quote, uncalled for.
Hmm.
This guy's running for president. Now, I don't think I didn't see the entire interview, but I don't think he asked anything of such a personal nature that it would be intrusive. So what question can you ask somebody, especially on their position on issues, would be uncalled for? I thought he was there to tell us what he stood for, but nonetheless, apparently the Minster got a little ruffled.
A little feisty,
there.
Did he?
Well, what happened? Yeah. I guess he went into his holding room and his handler said, "You need to go out there and be angry." So
that's right. Let me tussle your hair.
Yeah,
now go out there.
Yeah, tussle your hair, and I want you to get a concerned look on your face, and yes. Now go out there and tell that guy that was uncalled for. So there you go.
Hi.